John Tealava is the grandson of Basil Tevake, a famous navigator. He's explaining to me how to carve the walls of a small canoe. You have to get it just right. He listens to the sound of the wood as he carves to determine the proper thickness.
I'm Samantha Brown. Welcome back to the Nature Stories podcast. This week, the revival of traditional Polynesian sailing in the Solomon Islands. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Each week, we feature pieces about the intersection between people and place. Up now, an excerpt from The Story of Lata, produced and narrated by Stephanie Geyer-Stevens for Outer Voices.
Joanne Kahala and Jocelyn Saleh explain the connection between the cultural survival and the economic survival of their people.
These days, nearly everything is related to market, money, cash. It's a very expensive way to live. So my big question is, what's going to happen to these young people who are growing up? They don't have the experience that I grew up with, going back and forth with Te Puke.
How to go back? The question is, who will start to follow the old ways, since the old ones who led us, who helped us, are all dead? And even those of us who were born into it, but just before it changed. We all ask that question. Who will do it? Who can do it? How can we do it?
When the Te Puke were going back and forth, it was a time that was very good for everyone. So, how can it start again? How can we go back to that?
Jocelyn and Joanne tell me that they believe that rebuilding the Te Puke canoes and reviving knowledge of traditional navigation might be a solution for their people. There is, in fact, a project underway whose goal is to revive ancient Te Puke sailing in the Solomons. The Vakatomako project was started by another woman, the American anthropologist Mimi George.
They did have technology that was perfectly adequate. And they had it long before Europe went and discovered the Pacific for themselves, because people were there 60,000 years before the Europeans got there. And they had to get there by boats over pieces of water that they couldn't have drifted there.
Mimi has been traveling back and forth from her home in Hawaii to the Solomons, raising money and organizing the Vakatomako project.
The Vakatomako project aims to train a new generation in building, sailing, and navigating traditional Polynesian voyaging canoes using traditional Polynesian methods. The people of Taumako are Polynesians, and their paramount chief asked for some help from the outside, which he needed to get things going so that he could teach a new generation from his own vast knowledge. And my role has been to assist Paramount Chief Kavea in this project and to do research and documentation of the Polynesian methods, and to basically assist the young people of Taumako to do their own documentation. There's so much we can learn about the world and about ourselves with this depth of traditional knowledge. You know, it's a fact that you can navigate based on modern information without instruments. But the difference is that when somebody shows you how to do that, who has thousands of years of knowledge behind them, the knowledge is much deeper, much more rich and safer, and you can learn a lot more. So which way is more interesting?
John Tealava is the grandson of Basil Tevake, a famous navigator. He's explaining to me how to carve the walls of a small canoe. You have to get it just right. He listens to the sound of the wood as he carves to determine the proper thickness. Later, the canoe gets a traditional paint job with calciferous seaweed to protect it from insects. But in order to revive Te Puke sailing, someone needs to teach the art of building the large seafaring canoes and the art of navigating the open ocean by wind and waves and stars. This knowledge resides in the memories of only a few elders.
My name's Ross Hepworth. I grew up in the Solomons. I think it's in the Polynesian culture, there are only certain people who actually did the sailing and knew how to navigate. Today, that is basically one man, Chief Kavea, is the only one who knows how to do it. But he's an amazing man because he has some customs and traditional things that he uses while he's navigating. And I've actually seen him use it, and I've been very, very surprised. One is directing the weather. So if there's a thunderstorm in the front of the canoe, he can move that thunderstorm to the side with his little bamboo stick. So it's absolutely amazing. And I say this because I've actually experienced him. He was on my boat and we were coming to bad weather, and he's actually moved that rain away from us. And when he put his stick down, the rain came back. So he put it up again and the rain moved away. And he did that for 7 hours on our crossing. And I was absolutely amazed that he still had the ability. So I asked him, I said, are you going to pass that on? And he said, yes, my firstborn son will get it if he's interested. So I hope that custom stays alive, because it's very important when you're traveling on a traditional canoe that you do have some control of the weather. He was chanting in his local dialect, whatever it was. I never understood what he was saying, but he did the chant, and yeah, you just saw the clouds, storm clouds move in a different direction.
Much of the navigation and boat building was traditionally done by men, but many women, including Joanne, helped to build and sail the canoes. Now, as only a few elders are left who still hold this knowledge, it will take both men and women to restore it.
My role will be to tell stories and to give advice. I will give advice to the women and the young girls and the young boys and the young men. I will be able to tell them what to do when they have a Te Puke canoe.
Here, everyone pulls together to keep the children fed and the community solid. Men and women each have their own designated place in this social order. But now, women may have to go beyond their traditional roles in order to perpetuate tradition.
I will be able to tell them when you go to the bush that you have a coconut, that you take coconuts, that you must bring the husk, bury it in the sand, and it will rot, and it will be ready to make the rope, the sennit rope. And I will show the young girls how to weave the tepula, the woven things that they cover the Te Puke, so that the sun doesn't bake it and make it crack. And at the time of the rain, the boys and girls need to bring salt and wash the Te Puke down with salt so that it doesn't rot. And they need to paint it again with limu. The young boys need to go to the reef and collect white limu seaweed and pound it into paint, and then paint it on the hull so that the insects won't eat it. So all these things are going to be part of having a canoe again, and I will be able to advise them.
The work of reviving boat building and navigation that's being done by the Vako Taumako Project goes beyond the practicalities. It's part of the wealth of the islands, not easily measured by the yardstick called gross national product. Asere Yalangono works for the Ministry of Education of the Solomon Islands.
Poverty is a concept from the developed world. People poor because they don't earn money, right? However, in the rural areas, one person might not earn a dollar but still lives. Nobody pays them in terms of a dollar, right? You don't buy fish, you don't buy potatoes. They might be using kerosene for lighting, but if you don't have kerosene, you won't die. You can do without. You can go to bed, and the next day you wake up, when there is light, then you go to your work. They will look for money if they wish to buy something, but they don't look for money for the sake of looking for money. So it is quite a difference living in a developed country and then coming back to the Solomon Islands. You can see this difference there. They're certainly not poor because they can live, they can eat.
The Vakatalmako project built several Tapuke canoes in the 1990s. Aseri was at the launching of the first canoe.
The ministry was invited to attend this launching of the sailing of the Tapuke from the Duffs to Nifiloli in the reefs.
Janet Lonomaha was on one of these canoes. She remembers how it felt to be sailing on Tapuke again, just like when she got married so long ago.
In the moonlight, oh, it was extremely bright, a full moon. And I was very happy when we sailed into the bay. In the morning, when the sails were put up and I felt the wind, I was very happy. And all the canoes were alongside. The wind blew and we sailed in. Then there was a very big custom greeting when we reached Nifiloli. And that made me very happy too, to actually see that and be a part of that.
But these elder women also have concerns that their window of opportunity to revive the old ways may be closing.
I think that many of those girls and boys today, if they were sailing back and forth on the Tepuke, they would be afraid. They don't have a father to go with them like I did when I was young. So the young people would be afraid unless they had their father with them.
The fathers give a Tepuke to their sons, and those sons give it to their sons, and those sons give it to their sons. But that didn't happen. There was no handover. So we grab at our adopted life, but the real life was left behind. Custom is not something you read from a book. You're born with it.
The work of building new Tapuke canoes and maintaining the small fleet that has already been built is taking a back seat to the daily concerns of making a living.
There's a lot of work involved because the rope, for example, is the coconut husk, and they have to take the green coconut, bury it in the sea, leave it there for a couple of weeks, and then they have to plait and make the rope, and it's very tedious, time-consuming. Nowadays, everybody finds it easier to do something else rather than make the rope and make the sail.
It doesn't take a lot of money, but there's got to be some money so that if they spend a year and a half building a voyaging canoe, you know, or taking some voyages, that their families are not suffering.
Maybe Mimi cares more about the canoes than the islanders do. It's easy to challenge what she's doing and see it as disjointed. But Aseri says that sometimes it takes an outsider perspective to appreciate one's own culture.
It probably requires motivation from other people, researchers and people who try to assist, to go back into history and say, if you don't preserve it, it is bound to be lost.
The biggest problem that we face, the islanders need to realize that in order to maintain the culture, they are receiving some benefit from it.
There's a lot of work needs to be done in the country in preserving cultural way of life, and this is one aspect of it. We can say in maybe 50 years' time, 100 years' time, and said it was a good thing that this was recorded.
There's a common perception in our world that the old people in traditional cultures care about the old ways, and young people are jumping to get out into the big city. But here, none of the islanders, young or old, seem very interested in the fast-paced life in the capital, Honiara, a big city by Solomon Island standards. But city life changes islanders, whether they like it or not. Joanne's granddaughter, Frida Cooper, moved to Honiara for her studies. She's seeing firsthand what can happen to young people when they come here.
It's like you're floating. So it's better for us to continue to maintain it. If we are not very careful of it, people will forget about it.
But Frida's brother, Eddie, is frustrated. When he graduates, his plan is to start a shipping business for the islands, using modern fuel-run ships.
I want to be a manager of a company, like shipping company, because, you know, my province is very far from the capital in Honiara, so we have problems with transport. Since I was born, we have been going through this type of problems. So I prefer to have a shipping company to service my people. That's my dream.
The reality is that both solutions are foundering now. The economy is just not strong enough to keep pace with skyrocketing global fuel costs. Yet the Tapuka canoes are no longer a part of the island economy. So, how to address the practical problem of island-to-island transportation?
So the Tu'umbe said, "Okay, Lata, you follow me. I'm going to fly, and when you see me flapping my wings, and when I give a cry, then you will know that's the ko'ilo tree you need to cut for your tepuke." So the Te'ubi bird flew ahead, and Lata followed behind. And when Lata saw the Te'ubi flap its wings and cry around the tree, then Lata knew that was the one he would cut down to make the tepuke.
Reviving this traditional culture will rely on those who remember it. And among these islanders, the women are creating a foundation for that. I think to myself, maybe they will be the ones who will solve this problem they're facing. But how I think is so very different. I see that as well. Maybe if I lived on that island, I'd be able to see it as Pacific Islanders often do, and as Lata did. Life as one long continuum, one day after the next, life coming in with the tide and out again with the next good wind.
To hear the rest of this piece and to hear more stories like these, go to the Public Radio Exchange, prx.org. This podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, online at nature.org/stories, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown. Thanks for listening.